The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the fifth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, March 30th, 2024.
We're going to continue on this series concerning habitat for God and man. We're examining this topic of dwelling places. So I'm using the word habitat, even though the word habitation is in the Bible, in the English, but not in particular habitat, but we are talking about dwelling places. We're talking about where human beings, animals, God live, and obviously with the focus upon human beings. We've seen already in the past four sermons that God created man upon this earth, so he created this physical earth as the ideal habitat to support human life, not only to just make a meager existence, but in order to thrive. We've covered then the first two, as I've deemed them, the most important physical needs of man. If you think you're going to duplicate a habitat where human beings can live, what's the most important thing? And so I picked breath. So we've covered the fact that human beings have to have air and an atmosphere. You got to be able to breathe, or else your life expires very, very quickly. Secondly, then, and last time we covered the topic of water. Water as a need for human survival. The physical, and then more importantly, the spiritual counterparts of water. And that's what I'm trying to do with all of these, to show you the physical habitat of man, but how it relates to the things in the spirit realm that God wants us to learn and to take seriously. So we are looking at both physical and spiritual symbolism of each of these elements, and seeking to reinforce the fact that we are totally dependent upon God for our lives. We are absolutely, totally dependent upon him for our physical existence. But as you know, and more importantly, we are absolutely dependent upon him for any hope of life in the future beyond this physical realm. And all of these things that are important when we're talking about dwelling places or habitats. So once you have a living, breathing human being, we've decided, well, water is an important element in order to keep you alive. What's the next one then that we want to cover this afternoon? Food. All right. Now, I could do a whole lot with the food topic. I am not going into a detailed thing on diet. I am going to hit some high points on the issue of human diet, but I'm keeping this to one sermon, not turning it into a sub-series, because the point of this particular series is literally to hit each one of them on a high level in a summary fashion, to put it in the broader context. So, and the Bible has so much to say about food, so I'm limiting this very, very much to just an overview. Food for man was part of God's particular creation. It was a heavy consideration. Now, stop and think. We take it for granted. But again, God could have made human beings just to need air and water, right? I mean, he could have made us physically so that if you had air and you had water, you had all that you need to exist. But he made it so that we need more than air and water. We actually need to eat, and we need to take in and process nutrients from the food that actually feeds ourselves, our cells, and then provides what we need and to create health. So we take all of that for granted, but just if you stop and think about it and say, if God was starting from a blank slate, I'm going to create physical creatures that are subject to death, and I'm going to create the need for them to have certain things in order to keep them alive so that they don't expire. Isn't it interesting that he picked food? Because that's pretty complex. Now, if you didn't have to eat, even if you had to breathe and you had to drink water, think about how much extra time you would have. The fact that we have to eat consumes a lot of time, at least especially for the ones that cook, right? But think, if you didn't have that, how different would your physical lives be? So we take that for granted, but stop and think about it. Well, let's start in Genesis 1, verse 27, because here is a confirmation of the fact that God built into the environment of this earth, this habitat, the opportunity for us to have the food that we need to feed these bodies. Genesis 1, beginning in verse 27, so God created man in his own image, in the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over every living thing that moves upon the earth. All that to set up for verse 29. And now we read, and God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. This is in the King James, and this word doesn't really mean meat like in animal flesh. It means food. Okay, that's what the Hebrew word means. So he says, these plants and these trees that he created, he said, to you it shall be for food. Verse 30, and to every beast of the earth, and not just for human beings, but as we will see for all of the other land creatures, to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creeps upon the earth, wherein there is life. So we're talking about land animals, including that scientists will call mammals and reptiles and birds. I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. So he created all of us, regardless of whether you're human or you're animal, to need food as well as air and water. And the earth provides all of that for every one of us. And notice it in Psalm 136, because this is what he said in a short confirmation. Psalm 136, verse 25. Psalm 136, 25 says, who giveth food to all flesh? So there it is in a simple form. That's what God did. And of course, he does nothing by accident. So this was methodical. This was calculated. Who giveth food to all flesh, for his mercy endures forever. O give thanks unto the God of heaven, for his mercy endures forever. So it was a part of a benevolent creation that God provided not only the need for our bodies to be sustained by food, he provided the habitat in order to provide everything that we needed, not only to survive, but to thrive. Notice next Genesis chapter 9. Now we're talking about the story in the days of Noah. And now we're going to find out more. Genesis 9, beginning in verse 1. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air and upon all that moveth upon the earth, upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered. So he gave human beings authority over the earth, even though there's all these other species of creatures. Yet human beings are the top dog, if you will. So God made them subject to us, and it doesn't mean that we don't have negative encounters with the creatures of the world. No, we are, and that was one of the prophecies of the last days, is that there's going to be more rebellion in that kingdom because of the sins of man, and we certainly seem to see that. But for the most part, human beings then have been the ones that control. And then we read in verse 3, every moving thing that liveth. So now what are we talking about? Seems to be excluding plants and trees. Well, they move when they sway in the wind, I guess, but I don't think that's what he's talking about. Every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you. Oh, we need to talk about this, whatever that means. Every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things. So now he's addressing not just plants, the vegetables, if you will, that we eat, but now we're talking about animal flesh as a part of the food that was created for human consumption. And then now we get into all the big debates by, you know, the ones who are vegetarian and say, well, we shouldn't be eating meat. Well, that's bogus. And that comes right out of Eastern religion, by the way. In case you have absorbed some of these things and you think it's just purely scientific, no, it's not. It comes out of Eastern religion. I've covered that in the past. All right, so you're talking about these religions like Buddhism and Hinduism that believe that all of these creatures have a right to live and you can't kill them, let alone eat them, which is what organizations like PETA, by the way, are all about. They're basically espousing Eastern religion. It's paganism, all right? Because God created animals to be consumed by human beings, all right? Every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you. Even as the green herb have I given you all things. So as I read to you in Genesis 1, where he specified the plants, the trees and the plants that would be food, now he's confirming, so are animals. So what is human diet intended to include? Plants and animals. I'm stating the obvious, but let's state the obvious. Verse 4, but flesh with, here's one consideration now, flesh, verse 4, with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall you not eat. So here is an enunciation of the fact that God said, don't eat the blood from these animals that will be part of your food. So any animal that is slaughtered for human consumption then needs to be bled properly, or else it's not appropriate food. So that's one of the laws he enunciated. Now, the fact that this wasn't written in Genesis 1 is where people say, well, see, at the beginning, they were vegetarians. And then this meat eating only started 2,000 years later, 1,500, 2,000 years later in the days of Noah. Not so. Adam and his family were doing sacrifices. They were sacrificing lambs. What were they doing with that? Total burnt offerings, or were there also thanks offerings that included animals that they were eating? Yeah. So anyway, this is a part of what we believe, by the way, and again, I'm not making this a long, detailed explanation of that. Did God mean that every single creature on this earth, both plant and animal, was fit for human consumption? Is that what we read here? He said, because they're all for food. No, what he's saying is that all that human beings need for health is there. He's not saying that every single creature is intended to be part of our diet. What's proof of that? Well, is the entire plant kingdom good for food? Would you eat every single plant that's out there? Or are some of them poison? Well, we just read in Genesis 1, he said, you know, all these seed-bearing plants are food for you. So is that how you're going to interpret it? Or is that a fact that we know by human experience is limited? Yeah, so there's certain plants, if you eat them, they'll kill you. God made it that way. He made poisonous plants. Now, some of these same plants that are poisonous to human beings are absolutely good food for other beasts. They eat them, they have no problem. Their digestive tract is very different than ours. But you eat them and I eat them and it's going to kill us. So this all, you know, everything is for food, is proven even through common sense to be limited according to the things, the subset of those things in this habitat, which truly are good for the human body. And what's proof of that? Genesis 7 verse 1, when it comes to meat, and this one very few people know, people who call themselves Christian, and they all know the story of Noah and the ark. And what do you see with the story of Noah and the ark? It's always the animals walking up the ramp onto the ark two by two, right? Well, how about seven by seven? What? What are you talking about? Well, here it is, Genesis 7, verse 1. The Eternal said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I sent righteous before me, seen righteous before me in this generation. Verse 2, of every clean beast. Wait a minute. I can see Noah saying, wait a minute. What do you mean clean beast? We've never had this concept for the last 1,500 years. And now you're introducing for the first time the idea of a clean beast versus an unclean beast? No, that makes no sense. Guess what? From the Garden of Eden, from the creation of Adam and Eve on the sixth day, there was a difference between clean and unclean animal flesh as far as human diet, even if God did not choose to specify it. But all the pieces are here. Of every clean beast, he said, thou shalt take of thee by sevens. I never see this depicted in the cartoons. But here it is. Of every clean beast, thou shalt take to thee by sevens, the male and his female. Seven sets or pairs of male and female were to be taken on the ark. And of beasts that are not clean, by two. So the unclean beasts were two by two. The clean beasts were seven by seven. The male and the female. Verse 3. Of fowl also of the air by sevens. So there's something about clean birds versus unclean birds. The male and female. Why? Why this difference in sevens versus twos? To keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. Because part of a healthy human diet is meat. Noah and his family were going to be on this ark for over a year. They had to take their food supply with them. And it wasn't just plants, it was going to be meat. Now, what would happen if they only took sets of two? The clean beasts, like the cows, would get eaten. And then there wouldn't be any more left, which means they'd get off the ark and those animals would already be extinct. So God said, take seven pairs of these that you eat for food so that you will eat some of them in the next year, but then there'll still be some to repopulate once you get off the ark. Makes sense, doesn't it? That's exactly what was going on. So God provided food for man from the earth, and he wrote the instruction manual to tell us what fuel is meant for these mechanical bodies. Where do you find that? Well, it was specified to Israel, but it wasn't a law for Israel, it was a law for man. Leviticus 11 is one example of it. We're not going to turn there. There's your rules for determining what is clean meat and unclean meat. But it goes all the way back to God's use of the term clean and unclean back in the days of Noah. And again, it relates all the way back from the beginning. What's the common sense conclusion? Since everybody wants to argue over technicalities from a position of wanting to justify what they want to do and say that it's okay. And you know what the big problem with that is? They're all arguing as if it's just a scholastic religious debate. No, you know what we're talking about? We're talking about something the same as if you want to argue over the meaning of your car manual. The manual that comes with the car that you buy that tells you what kind of fuel to put in the tank. And you want to parse it and say, well, I don't think this really means, because see, this form of the word means, so I can really put in the tank this. It's not just, you know, a religious argument. We're talking about the practical manual that tells us what kind of fuel will make your body run properly. And what instead will make it bog down and become a curse? It's physical. It's physical, and it applies to every human being. It's not just, oh, those meat laws in Leviticus, you know, that was just for Israelites, but I'm a Gentile, so I don't have to do them. Yeah, so you're gonna put poison in your body, and you think there's a difference between an Israelite body and a non-Israelite body. How stupid. It's a human consideration. And God is the one who created all of the human family, and he made us all subject to the needs of the same diet, the fuel requirements in order for you to maintain your life and to thrive in your life. That's what we're talking about. Now, some people who take exception to the fact, and I'm not turning, you know, to the old statements where Mr. Armstrong, you know, said that, you know, eating unclean meat is a physical sin, not a spiritual sin. But that's the point he's making. We're talking about what is appropriate fuel for your body that will help you to live and to have a good quality of life for the years that you're here. It's a physical consideration. Now, it is also a spiritual consideration for the people of God who have been called into His church and have been taught these truths. Now, if you and I violate them because we just want to do it different, we want to eat what we eat, regardless of what God said is the proper fuel for your body, now it's not just a physical consideration, it's a spiritual, because now we have the element of rebellion. But for the people of the world, it's just physical. It's just physical. They don't know any better. So they're putting garbage in their tank. They're harming their bodies. They decrease their lifespan, and they live with disease while they live, and they have early deaths, and they don't know why. Well, some of them do, but a lot of them don't. Because they don't understand the rules, and they don't realize that this Bible was written with the instruction manual to tell how to take care of their bodies. As well as, by the way, how to gain eternal life in the God family. But they don't even understand that it's a physical manual about how to have good physical health. But it is. So these people who want to argue about it, like people who were in the church for years, and then they got mad and they got offended and then they left. Now they're going to go back. Now they're going to start eating pork. How stupid. Absolutely stupid. I'm not in the church anymore, so I'm going to wreck my body. It's a physical consideration. Your body will not run on that junk. Oh, it may for a time, which is why, you know, if it was like eating hemlock, where you got the immediate poison and the effect of it, human beings would learn, oh, don't eat pork, it's a poison. But it's a slow-acting poison for the majority. And that's why it's subtle. It is nevertheless real. So when you eat shellfish, and when you eat unclean birds, and when you eat pork, you are introducing poison into your body that will rob you of your health and vitality and probably lead you to an early death. People, you say, well, I've known people who lived to 100 and they, you know, had their ham every day for dinner. I know the answer, Mr. Raymond Cole would say. How long would they have lived had they not eaten that? Yeah, everything is by degree. I remember he answered that about George Burns, which a lot of you don't even know who that is, an old actor and a comedian who smoked cigars his whole life and lived to like 102 or something. See, he smoked cigars, you know, and lived over 100. That's what I remember Mr. Cole saying. How long would he have lived if he hadn't smoked? Everything is by comparison. So I'm not, hopefully my audience, those of you under the hearing of my voice, are not wanting to parse and argue from a legalistic standpoint about these things. I think I'm talking to the choir. I hope I am anyway, that you understand that God is the one who created your body and He decides what is proper fuel and what is not. So we're not going to argue about that. We're going to take His lead and let Him tell us. So we have, besides the things that he put that you can read in black and white in the Bible, there's also something called the faith once delivered, the proper interpretation for the gray areas. Who's going to decide the things that he chose not to make totally plain? Well, the faith once delivered was given to the church in our day with guidelines on how to eat. Yeah, we received instruction. We believe we received that instruction from Jesus Christ. It came through the voice of a man, but it was the benevolent instruction of the very being who actually brought Adam and Eve and all of their children into existence. He's the one who knows, and he's the one who decided what is proper fuel for these physical bodies. So hopefully we're ones that want to pay attention to him. The disobedient will bring curses upon themselves. They do, they have, and they always will. The ones who seek to submit themselves humbly to their God and hear his instruction are the ones who are going to be most blessed. It's not about doing what the minister says. Forget that. I didn't create these rules. I'm just re-enunciating the very same rules we had from the beginning. This was a part of this revealed way of life in an aggregate. All right. So let me get into the diet stuff temporarily. What should we eat? I did a sermon, I think it's been about 18 months ago, short series of sermons called Dietary Apostasy. I even forgot I did it, but I found them. I'm going to cite some things because I got some citations from the old literature from the 1960s. I'm going to synoptically use that again. I also did a longer series a number of years ago called Diet Beyond the Basics. If you want the details of what we were taught is a way to take care of your body as a good steward and have better health so that you don't have all these diseases like people in the world around you and your neighbors. Would you like to avoid that? Who wouldn't? How about following the instruction manual for your body like your neighbors aren't? All right, here's a citation from the Plain Truth magazine, December 1967. This was Mr. Armstrong from his personal, from the editor. And he's answering the question, well, what else can we eat? Okay, we can't eat this and we can't eat, well, what else can we eat? Which is the way human beings usually respond. And so here's his answer. Eat more vegetables. Green, leafy, raw, salad, vegetables unspoiled by injurious dressings. Non-starch vegetables cooked at low temperatures, about 180 degrees, and served with only butter and a little salt. Fresh fruits, clean, lean meats, no fat. Whole grains, fresh, raw, unpasteurized milk, butter, cheese, eggs, and clean fowl. There you go. That's a synopsis of food that is good for you. Now, how does this compare to all what the experts out there, all these dietary, you know, experts with all the degrees behind their name? Every fad in the world has been advanced over hundreds of years to tell you how to take care of your body and what to eat and what not to eat. And they're all over the map. And there's still a lot of you that are want to try to get your dietary instruction on the internet and from YouTube. To the extent that it supports and confirms what God taught us in the church, fine. But when it diverges, please don't call me and say, well, would you please look at this video because it says da 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 da. All I'm going to do is say, how does it compare back to this list of the things we're supposed to eat? It contradicts, then it's no good. End of story. All right? So, was it in the 1960s when this whole supposedly scientific dietary mode of thinking concerning dietary fat and cholesterol? Oh, cholesterol's bad. And so we can't eat eggs. Eggs are high in cholesterol. Bad, 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 bad. You can't eat butter. Oh, butter's bad, so we need a substitute for butter. We'll call it margarine. It used to be called oleo, all kind of things. Oh, because we're so smart. We're going to replace this bad, horrible thing that will cause clogging of your arteries, and instead we'll use this man-created thing called margarine, and your health will be so much better. And we'll stop eating meat. And how was human health after that? From the mid to late 1960s and this low-fat diets. So I'm not talking about meat fat that God said don't eat the fat. Strip off all of this, you know, all of the fat so that you just eat the lean. No, we're talking about fat from dairy and from eggs and everything else. And how did that whole course of wisdom go? It's been devastating to human health. You've got higher instances of cardiovascular disease and everything else from these low-fat diets than ever before. Why? Because it's false. So-called experts who don't know nothing. They're idiots. Which is fine for the world because they have no other source to go to. They have to try and, you know, pick their experts to try and guide them so they can try and, you know, have healthier lives. Members of the true church of God, please don't go down that path. You've got the source of the truth. We just seem to discount it. Too bad. To the extent that we discount it, too bad. Because it came from Jesus Christ, who made your body. So we had the manual, how to take care of this machine that will carry you physically through the rest of your days in the flesh, on how to take care of it. And Mr. Armstrong goes on to tout potatoes, by the way. Whole potatoes, not stripping out, you know, the nutrients that are part of, eat the whole potato. He even cited, you know, some people call it the king of vegetables. So the other element that we were taught, and you can find in the old literature, is a proper proportion of all these good things. So it's one thing to pick the right things to eat, but then it's also appropriate, it's necessary to eat them in the proper proportion. And this is where a lot of God's people can err. Oh, well, clean meat is good, so I'm going to eat 75% of my diet's going to be meat. Well, you'll run into problems. If I remember right, Mr. Armstrong advocated about 25% meat, 75% non-meat. And as he said here, your vegetables. So I'm not talking about 75% potatoes and the other 25% steak, which is what some of us as Americans would do. All right, that's not balance either. You can be eating the right things and still get it wrong and throw your body a curve, which is going to lead you to disease. So you got to eat the right things, then you got to eat them in the right proportion. Because that's how sophisticated this machine called your body is. It needs these nutrients in the right formulation. All right, so in essence, so what you're supposed to eat, good lean meat in the right proportion, raw milk, that's hard to get, isn't it? And some of you live in jurisdictions where it's illegal. A lot of you do. But I'm telling you, if you're drinking or you're using, ultra-pasteurized milk, you're harming your body. You are putting yourself under a curse. Well, I can't get anything else. Okay, fine. God is not going to suspend the physical laws because you can't get it at your store. And you can say, well, I'm depending upon God to create a miracle in order to keep me alive. I've done everything I should reasonably be expected to do, but now the rest is on Him. That ain't going to fly. And the proof of it, by the way, is in the amount of disease that exists within the church. Because there's been a whole lot of this, you know, this kind of, well, that's, God can't expect me to do that. Well, God can't expect you to have health either, if you won't follow the instructions for whatever reason. I find it very, very interesting that people will pull out all the stops not to eat pork. Why is pork the big bugaboo or shrimp? Oh, well, because that's in Leviticus 11. Okay, I get that. But I'm telling you that all of these other things, including eating highly processed food where man is perverted, all right, and eating everything in the wrong proportion is just as much or maybe even more of a threat than eating pork. Because people in the church want to treat eating pork like you take one mouthful, you know, of a piece of pork bacon, or Jimmy Dean sausage or whatever, and it's the end of the world, but they'll eat all this other crap. Why? I suspect all the other garbage that people in the church eat is a whole lot worse than if you were eating pork. Personal opinion. No, I'm not advocating eating pork. I'm advocating don't eat pork and don't eat the other crap either. How's that? Good lean meat, raw milk, fresh eggs, organically grown vegetables, fruits, proper cooking oils. That's an important thing. Especially olive oil. The other principle we were told, eat what God made, not what man made. Now, if you use that guideline, you're going to rule out a whole lot of aisles in the grocery store. The stuff that's in boxes and packages. Man perverts everything he touches. The only way you can avoid the trap of eating poisonous food is if you don't trust man to process it. Now, if you're not eating everything off your own farm, and I get it, you're buying it in the store, but you can at least try and buy fresh food, not stuff that's already been packaged or boxed. Here's another citation from a September 1962 Plain Truth article entitled The Plain Truth About Fasting, also written by Mr. Armstrong. He said a lot of really good things in this article. Let me just stop. I mean, it's about fasting, and I'm not really citing the things about fast. Fasting is another important thing. So we are not only commanded to fast at atonement. That's a mandatory fast. I wonder how many of us under the hearing of my voice only fast on atonement. If you do that, if you only fast on atonement, then not only are you using fasting through the year as a spiritual tool to help you grow close to God, but you're also harming your body because you're not giving it a rest. That's what we were taught. That was a part of the program, okay? Faith Once Delivered and all. It's part of the program. So it's the same way if the manual for your car says you need to change the oil on some basis of frequency, and you say, well, I only put the best fuel in it, but you never change the oil, what happens? Your car's in trouble. You just limited its lifespan and it's gonna leave you sitting. So you gotta do both. So fasting was another thing that we were told is a requirement. It's spiritual, but it's physical at the same time, actually to help your body. So it's amazing. Right now there's a fad on intermittent fasting. It's almost like fasting is not as much of a total freak thing today at this moment in year 2024 as it might have been 30 years ago. But again, human beings always go to extremes. Count on it. They do and they will. How were we taught to fast? Well, yes, Mr. Armstrong cited some cleansing fast he did where he might go on a juice fast for many days. But how do I view that? That's like abusing your body, abusing your car engine, and it gets totally sludged up, and then you've got to take it in for some major work, so now you need a total redo to clean it out because of misuse. But on a regular basis, you shouldn't have to do that. If you have to take your car in every year to have the engine rebuilt, there's something wrong. And so a super extended fast or some radical kind of fast, it may be necessary in your case, but that's like an engine rebuild. So if you're eating right, if you're taking care of your body correctly, you shouldn't need to redo it. Because God created these bodies to be able to function. But regular fasting is an element of taking care of them. I'm talking about reasonable fast, typically a 24-hour fast, just like you do on atonement. And it can help in a lot of ways that we don't even have documented. But trust me, because the manufacturer of your body said so, there's some good things about it, and bad things if you don't, even if they're invisible. So here's this fasting article, September 1962. Mr. Armstrong says, nearly everyone today is eating in excess of starches, sugars, and fats. The Bible forbids the eating of animal fat. Starch, he says, is a modern invention. Millers take wheat, corn, and rice apart, take out the 12 alkaline mineral elements, leave the 4 acid-reacting elements, and the sugar refiners do the same to natural sugar. In other words, they break it apart and only feed you a part of it. Where God created a number of these elements to be good food for you when you eat it in its entirety as God made it, which is why whole grain is on the list. Sugar is a different thing because I'm telling you, trying to trust what these people do with sugar and how they process it, good luck. I don't trust them. So the cane sugars and all these other things, the stores now, the health food stores, are full of all these healthy products. And I don't trust them at all. Because they're still processed. I'm not saying I never eat anything processed, but I'm telling you I don't trust it. The only thing I would trust is that which you can get from a good source in the natural way that God made it, and then you're the one that processes it yourself in your own kitchen. Including, by the way, grinding your own grain. I don't have time for that. I know. And I know I'm blessed because I get all this good stuff and I'm not the one who actually does it in the kitchen. I acknowledge that. But again, so you're going to say, God can't expect me. I work. I also have to do my cooking. I don't have time to make my own bread. I don't have time to do this. I don't have time. You don't have time to have good health. You don't have time to have good health. That's what you're saying. Again, this is a physical consideration for the maintenance of this machine called your body. Argue about it all you want that you don't have time. You still put garbage in, you're going to break down. And again, the proof of it is the health of many in the church. This isn't just an intellectual argument. The proof is in the health. Part of the faith once delivered was the fact that illness should not be the natural state of man. Illness is the natural state in the world because of the violation of God's laws. That's why illness appears to be normal. But we were taught, and it came from Jesus Christ, that if we eat correctly, if you put the right fuel in this body, if you take care of these bodies, including the exercise, the fasting, everything else you're supposed to do, you will have health. And yes, it's not just a personal, there is this issue about inheriting things from past generations, and God confirmed that too when he spoke in the Old Testament about the fathers eat the sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Yes, there are curses that are handed down, not only mentally because of what we experience in our families, but I'm sure diet. Mr. Cole used to say that we have progressively gotten weak over all the generations over the last 6,000 years. The strongest physical specimens were Adam and Eve. And because of sin, then every next generation gets weaker and weaker and weaker, which means we're at the end of the line, the dross. So yes, there are inherited things, but there's too many in the church who basically want to scapegoat their genetics for all their problems. And I'm sure that's a factor, but I do not buy that that's all. And I believe if you want a miracle from God, the miracle's not going to come because he's going to let you shortcut how you make your dinner and create a miracle not to make it a poison to you. I suspect that if you go out of your way to follow the manual on how to take care of your body, the miracle will come by him intervening and maybe counteracting some of the genetic things that weren't your fault. How's that for a way to look at it? The problem is we want what we want. We lust and we covet, and it includes food. And we're used to what we like, our comfort foods, our habits, our addictions, and we don't want to change. So we convince ourselves that God doesn't demand that we change. And I'm telling you, he wrote the manual, he knows. Let's stop arguing with him. Mr. Armstrong taught us, don't eat anything that won't spoil, just eat it before it does. Which is a citation from an old nutritionist. Which is another thing to say, you know, if you're eating stuff in boxes or packages that has these preservatives in it so that it doesn't spoil, then that's not proper food. If it's good food, the fuel that God made to work in your body has a sell-by date. It will spoil. Here's another citation from that same 1962 fasting article. It says, an authority on nutrition said, eat only such foods as will spoil. Eat them before they do. Why do flour millers give us white flour? Sugar refiners, white sugar? Because freshly ground natural whole wheat will spoil. Yeah, it will. In a third world countries, it's hard for the brethren in order to get whole grain. They'll get rice and wheat that's had all of the nutrients taken out of it, because what's left over, they can preserve without refrigeration and it won't spoil. Interesting to me that these mills will separate out the bran, the nutrients, feed you the starch, and the good stuff goes to the animals. It makes them healthy. And you eat what's left over, which will kill you. He says, by removing the real food value, the 12 mineral elements, and in addition, perhaps adding an artificial preservative or bleach, they prevent spoilage. They do it to make money, to give shelf life. They pay to process it, and it may sit on the shelf for weeks and weeks, and you buy it, and they make money. He says, even most so-called whole wheat flour that you buy today contains artificial additives and preservatives. And I wonder how many of us read the labels. But even if you read them, you can't know for sure unless you do it yourself. It's the best way to be in control of the process. You get the food as near to the source that God made as possible, and then you process it yourself. Oh, I know that's time consuming. There you have it. And that's what I say in all these past series I've done, which you can look up if you care to be sure of what you're eating, cook from scratch. It's the way it should be done. All right, that's the physical. God created these bodies. They are machines that need fuel. God created this earth to produce all that we need for health. All right, what's the spiritual counterpart? John 4, verse 30. John 4, verse 30. Then they went out of the city and came unto him. In the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. They were worried about him because he hadn't eaten in a while. Verse 32. But he said unto them, I have food to eat that you know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, hath any man brought him aught to eat? See, they're still thinking totally physical. He says, I have food you're not aware of. Oh, so they're treating it like he had this stash or whatever. Of Lara bars or something, I don't know. He answers, verse 34, Jesus said unto them, my food is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. So here now we're talking about the spiritual counterpart of a physical diet for a human body. Now we're talking about feeding something else, which is beyond our mortality. What he's saying is Christ was fulfilling his Father's will, and that was the thing that really sustained him most. Matthew 4, verse 3. Matthew 4, beginning verse 3, when the tempter came, so here was the temptations of Christ by Satan the devil, after he had fasted 40 days. And that was a miracle, by the way. So Moses did it, here Jesus Christ did it. Is that an example that we should be fasting 40 days? No. Again, that's not what we were taught. Well, you know, why are you just following what Herbert Armstrong said? Because he was the servant that God used to reveal the truth to us. That's why. When the tempter came to him, he said, if thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread. But he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Again, so the counterpart to the physical is being made here, that the spiritual food is much more important by comparison than the physical. You got to have the physical. And as a steward, you are commanded to take care of this body. But on the grand scheme of things, the spiritual is much more important. But to the extent that you take care of your physical body, you are showing a willingness to follow God's instruction, and you're showing love for God. So where did this citation, because he says, as it's written. Well, it's actually written in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. Let's turn there. This is what Jesus Christ was citing. Deuteronomy 8, verse 3 says, and he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna. So it's reciting the way that he kept the Israelites alive in a blazing wilderness that was not a habitat to support human life, because there wasn't food. and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, meaning you'd never heard of it before or seen it. Nobody had. Neither did thy fathers know. And why did God create this miracle in providing manna to keep them alive in the wilderness? That he might make thee to know that man doth not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Eternal doth man live. So there was a reason. It wasn't just a physical consideration. Yes, it physically kept them alive so that they didn't starve to death. But he did it in that way. He created miracle food that rained down from heaven. And he gave them the rules on how to collect it, including a confirmation that the Sabbath is different and the preparation for the Sabbath day is important. All of that is included in the manna miracle, by the way. But God is revealing his methodology and his thinking, his purposes. It wasn't just to physically solve the problem to keep them from starving to death. It was also to teach them a lesson about their dependence upon God for life. Not just physical existence, but for the hope of eternal life, which is what this whole thing is about. Man doth not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Eternal doth man live. The same being who inspired Moses to write this was the same one who in Matthew 4 that we just cited, he quoted himself. He quoted himself to answer his disciples about what his priorities were. John 6, verse 26. John 6, verse 26, Jesus answered them and said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me, not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat the loaves and were filled." So why did he gather this big group of people? Oh yeah, people love to see miracles. But Jesus read their hearts and minds, and he says, you didn't come because you wanted to hear the words of life. You came because you were getting a meal. You were coming for the free food. So he knew their true priorities and their motivation. Hey, there's all this food, this bread and this fish, and it's like unlimited. Come out to the desert. And everybody flocks out there. A big spiritual revival, and it's all about filling their bellies. So said Jesus. Verse 27, by comparison, what's his instruction? Labor not for the food which perishes, but for that meat or that food which endures unto everlasting life. It's about priorities. Which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. He kept having to try and direct them to the spiritual. Because as human beings, as carnal beings, we're all about the physical. Give me what I want physically. And he's trying to point them to something that's much more important by comparison. Drop down to verse 30. You know, and this was the instance here when he got himself in a lot of trouble, if you think about it that way. He had all of these people, he's given them this message, he's performed enough miracles, and they are there, they are his celebration committee, they are just on his side, boy, and then he blew it. You can read the whole chapter 6 here and find it. But here, he's trying to teach him this principle. Verse 30, they say therefore unto him, what sign showest thou then that we may see and believe thee? They wanted physical evidence that he actually was sent by God as a prophet, let alone the Son of God. Don't even go there. What's your proof of your legitimacy to speak in the name of God? Which is what human beings always want. So they said, you know, our ancestors, you know, Moses proved he was legitimate because under Moses' leadership, we got this manna. That's in essence what they're saying. Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Who's the he? Well, Christ, in his rebuttal, clarifies what they were thinking. Verse 32, then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven. Well, maybe they weren't saying, maybe they were saying God gave them the bread from heaven. Well, then why did Jesus correct them? They were attributing it to Moses. Again, they're asking Jesus for a physical proof that he's speaking in the name of God. Otherwise, they feel legitimate to reject him. I mean, after all, they said, in the old days, the true servants of God in the flesh gave evidence by miracles. With Moses, you see, we got this manna. What do you have to offer us as proof now? Jesus says, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. So manna was physical. Manna was it was miracle bread, but it was bread. And they ate it and they processed it in their bodies and it kept them alive. And I wonder what the nutritional mix was, but it was perfect food because that's the only thing they had. They didn't have the vegetables and the starches and the meat. They had manna. So God created a perfect fuel that for 40 years not only kept them alive, but they thrived as never before. It was the perfect food. Wonder what it was made of. But the more important aspect of the whole thing was that it was a miracle from God that kept them alive. The spiritual counterpart is the fact that we need the kind of spiritual food that's going to give us life eternal. That's why you're here. Moses gave you not that bread from heaven. My Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven. He was talking about himself, and this is where he's going to lose his audience. Boy, are they going to freak out on him here. And giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. He hadn't clarified it enough for them to really, go off the rail. Oh, so you're offering an equivalent of manna, something that came down from heaven? You're a prophet of God? Yeah, we want it. Can we have it? Verse 35, Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. What? I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that you also that ye also have seen me and believe not. So he also knew their hearts. He knew they weren't buying it, and they wouldn't buy it, and they didn't. So you can read on to the end of chapter 6, because then he elaborated, he dug himself even deeper. He says, my flesh, you've got to eat my flesh and drink my blood for salvation. And now they really freaked out. And by the end of the chapter 6, it says, the majority of those disciples who were all on his side cheerleading left him, causing him even to turn to his inner circle and say, are you going to leave too? So they didn't understand at all. But it's interesting that this whole spiritual lesson in using food as an example of the work of God spiritually is a no-go for most human beings. And I guarantee you still is. They don't even know what it means to partake of Jesus Christ, because they don't know who the real Christ is. But he compared his body to bread. And for unleavened bread, we know that, right? He is compared to the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So what does that tell you? Bread can't be bad. Proper bread with the proper nutrients, baked or cooked, processed the right way. So these people want to tell you that bread is bad. Some of you have allergies. I get that. If you have an allergy to something that God made to be good, you have to adjust your diet. But just understand, it doesn't make the idea or the concept of grains turned into bread bad, or else Christ would not have compared his own body to it. The other thing, that's why people want to ask me, well, about sugar. I don't know, because the Bible doesn't talk about cane sugar, but it does talk about honey. So I know I'm 100% safe with the things that God already used in the Bible. A land, what did he give to Israel? A land flowing with milk and honey. So milk and honey can't be bad. It better be raw milk from a reliable source, and it better be honey that's not been processed into something bad, and a lot of it is, but you can't tell me milk and honey are bad. Matthew 5, verse 6, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, whose priorities are not physical, but are about the spiritual requirements for a true Christian. Beware of anyone who tries to redefine for you what is good food. Again, if you will compare all these supposed experts and what you read and what you hear and what you see on YouTube to the foundation that we were given in God's church, which came from Jesus Christ, you can sift out a whole lot of nonsense, and don't waste your time with it. That's what I advise you to do. 1 Timothy 4, verse 3, because here's also a prophecy. It's for the last days, but it happens wherever human beings get involved in stuff. 1 Timothy 4, verse 3, what were they doing? These who have departed from the revealed faith, they don't respect the idea of God giving truth. They think they're going to come up with the truth through their own scientific processes. And what are they doing? Forbidding to marry, they're hindering marriage. So teaching something other than the truth concerning marriage, and God created marriage, is hindering marriage. What else are they doing? And commanding to abstain from meats or from foods which God hath created be received with thanksgiving. Oh, now the Protestants love to pick on this to say that's why, you know, those Old Testament laws are for Jews but not for us, you know, Gentiles. Because here, Paul is saying, you know, God made everything to be received if you just ask a blessing over it, I guess, which is why they pray over their food. What's he really saying? These are people who have perverted the faith once delivered, and what are they saying? They're commanding to abstain from foods which God created to be received with thanksgiving. Meaning God gave us the rules on what's good to eat, and you've got people telling you that the things that God said are good to eat is not good to eat. We're not talking about pork and shellfish. We're talking about the ones that are clean by God's definition. And yet people are telling you, oh, you should be a vegetarian. You shouldn't eat meat. Or you shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that or whatever. It's a departure from the revealed faith of them which believe and know the truth. You're talking about the church, the ones who are supposed to know. But they have now perverted it and are teaching something different than what we call the faith once delivered. There's a lot of that going on. Verse 4, for every creature of God is good, meaning if it's on the list that he said was clean, and nothing to be refused of the list of things that he made for fuel for your body, if it be received with thanksgiving. For it is sanctified by the word of God in prayer. But the condition here is that you're following the initial rules for stuff you put in your body. As I always say, it's not taking a Hostess Twinkie, shoving it in your face, and then asking God to bless it. That's not going to work. You follow God's instructions, but even for the potential that something has been contaminated, which is invisible and you cannot tell, you're still, by offering a prayer on your meal, you're giving God thanks for the fact that you have a source of food, and you are remembering that you depend upon him for your life and your health. So instead of just making this a thing, well, bless the meat and let's eat, it's good to remember this ritual, which, yes, we were taught to do too, ask a blessing before we eat. It's purposeful. It acknowledges God is the source of all of our blessings, including the food in this habitat in which we live and dwell and on this earth, for which we depend on for life. So what's the truth concerning food? Exactly what God revealed to be clean and the proper way to feed it. All right, so now if you're going to create an artificial habitat and you need a food supply, the same way I've given you these examples and everything else, you're going to have a complication, aren't you? Because it's really hard to duplicate that. especially when we're talking about fresh vegetables and fruits, right? It's really hard for an extended period of time to create a habitat where you have a food supply. You can do it, which will keep you alive, but you won't thrive if you don't have all of these elements in the proportion that God intended, which comes from the earth. So what are some examples? Well, simple ones. If you go on an extended camping trip, you got to take your food with you. Now, you're automatically taking a bunch of processed things, super concentrated things that don't take up a whole lot of space, you know, that you can eat, depending on the kind of camping that you do. But your challenge is to try to duplicate as much as you possibly can with the full realm of good food, including fresh food, the way God made these bodies to work. And anything less than that, you're making a compromise. So an extended period of time, you don't want to do that. If you have a survival bunker, I don't really know anybody who does, but now you're going to put a year's worth of supply of food in your radioactive fallout shelter. All right, it's all processed. This is all stuff that has, you know, it's going to last multiple years. It's in a package. All right, it may keep you alive, but it is not going to give you the health your body really needs to thrive. It's about survival. Examples from history, long sea voyages. So human beings grappled with this. It's one thing when you have a sea voyage where you've got ports of call and you have a chance to replenish the crew with fresh fruits and vegetables. It's another thing when you're months at sea. And so it took them a long, long time to figure out, like, where did scurvy come from? And all their doctors and scientists didn't know, and they had all kind of false ideas about what caused scurvy. It's a lack of vitamin C, which comes from fresh fruits and vegetables. All right, so when they didn't have it, what were they feeding these sailors on board? Barrels full of beef and pork, salted. They didn't have refrigeration. So it was all about food that wouldn't spoil. Well, sometimes it really did, and they ate it anyway. They had to carry their own fresh water on board in barrels. And guess what? That water would get scummy, algae. So what did they do to try and make it palatable? They mix it with liquor, which is where your grog came from. So it started off like the British Navy, it was beer. You know, they'd say the British Navy ran on beer. Something that, because beer then would actually preserve better and carry in an unrefrigerated environment better than water did, which is why they did these things. So later, actually, when they started going to the West Indies, the Caribbean, and you had all the sugar cane, then rum. So now a grog ration started being about four parts water and one part rum. And why did they originally do that? Just because they wanted to give the crew, you know, something yummy with liquor? No, it was to try and make this fetid water taste better. They tried to improve the taste of the water by adding rum, which is what they did. And then later on, then they figured out, if you're on long extended sea voyages, just having water and preserved meat from a barrel, you're going to have a lot of problems with nutritional deficiencies and especially scurvy. By about 1795, they figured this out, and the smart captain started making sure they brought on a supply of citrus. So they started improving the grog ration, not only with rum, but with lime or lemon juice. So it wasn't just to make it taste better, it was to try and keep the crew healthy enough to work the ship. So they learned over time some of these physical laws that applied to the human body. And it's just stupid and foolish to deny that they're real and that they're true. So the smart ones actually learned that and incorporated that into these artificial habitats, like months on board a ship, to try and keep their crew alive. And no, their health was compromised. You cannot be in that environment for an extended period of time and not have your health compromised, but at least try and mitigate it, which is what they were doing. Same thing would be true for these astronauts going to space. They take their food with them. They don't have a fresh food supply at all. Everything, the majority of what they're eating is in packages. And so the scientists tried to duplicate as much as possible to get them the nutrition that they need through a set of food sources which are not natural, like the habitat in which we were designed to live and to thrive. Everything is a compromise when you're talking about an artificial habitat. All right. The conclusion then is that any departure away from eating the way God intended for man to eat will produce curses. That's just a fact. Regardless of the argumentation we want to get into to make ourselves feel better about eating what we want to, you're not going to argue God into removing a curse that you're bringing upon yourself. You don't have to convince me or anybody else. Cause and effect in your body tells the tale. God provided the perfect way for us to eat, if we will.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the fifth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, March 30th, 2024.